two appeals. I represent Rhonda Brown in this appeal. This is a pretty straightforward contempt of court action initiated by Dean, Rhonda's husband, regarding parenting time. He filed an application for an order to show cause alleging that on specific occasions Rhonda had violated the order that was in effect by using to allow or failing to allow parenting time to occur. Rhonda contends on appeal that the evidence was insufficient for the court to make that finding. Notably, the court in its order didn't really even say anything specific. It said something like, well, I find that Rhonda's in local contempt of court with regard to parenting time or regarding parenting time.
Counsel, you object. You claim there's a modification of the plan, correct?
I'm sorry, yes.
You claim there was a modification of the parenting plan.
Yes.
Okay. Are you objecting to the modification on a permanent basis, a temporary basis, or both?
Well, I do think that Rhonda, the evidence was not clear and convincing to show that she willfully disobeyed the court order. But in the event the court assumes that she did, I think what you're asking is, did the court have the authority to modify the parenting plan? And
no, I'm separating that, counsel. Assuming she's in contempt, or any parent's in contempt, does the court then have the authority to temporarily modify the parenting plan during a purge plan? And can they modify it on a permanent basis beyond the purge plan? Are you objecting to one or the other or both those?
Both. I don't think that the court has the authority.
I'm sorry, did you say both?
Yeah, both.
Okay. Well, let's say the judge, in any case, finds someone in contempt for failing to give 5 days of parenting time. If the court doesn't modify the parenting plan to make up those 5 days, how could you ever have a purge plan?
Well, a purge plan could simply consist of complying with the court's order for a period of time.
So then in child support, you're modifying the order and having someone pay extra support to make up. So why isn't this the same thing in parenting time? So you're saying if a parent loses, let's say, 6 months of parenting time, they're just out 6 months. The court can't go back and make up that 6 months. They just say, going forward, you comply. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying, I'm saying that there isn't any law or rule or statute that prevents Dean from filing a complaint to modify in any way along with his contempt action. So I guess that is what I'm saying. I'm saying that I don't think that the court has the authority without notice to change the underlying order.
When you go into a contempt action, aren't you on notice that you could be found in contempt and that the court could temporarily modify whatever it needs to correct what you're being found in contempt of?
Right. I mean, as I understand it, contempt, you're either to coerce compliance or to punish non-compliance.
Well, isn't it also to remedy the previous non-compliance? Not only to enforce compliance in the future, but to provide some remedial measure to address the non-compliance in the past.
Well, there are attorney fees available for a party who successfully shows that the other party was in contempt. There is, of course, the possibility of a jail sentence, as was in this case. I hereby sentence you to 60 days in the county jail, but I hereby give you the opportunity to suspend that and purge your contempt by doing this. I just don't think that when the doing this part can is a change of the underlying order, because...
But let's assume that we have a very short-term contempt. In other words, it happens, ex-husband is deprived of weekend. Ex-wife confesses, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. The trial court have the authority as part of a contempt sanction to say, okay, you get an extra weekend, Dad?
Right, so, I mean, is that a temporary modification? See, that's the thing that, you know, I argue with trial judges all the time, is, you know, just because some order is entered within the confines of a particular case doesn't mean that it's a temporary order. I mean, it's a permanent order, right? I mean, if he gets, I guess the distinction is somehow, does the court have the power to remedy this on a by saying that Dean gets make-up parenting time?
In my example, we were assuming it's every other weekend, and he was deprived of one weekend. Couldn't the court say, okay, you not only get next weekend, which you would ordinarily get, and 2 weeks after that, but you get the one in the middle, too. You get three in a row to make up for the one you lost. That's not a modification, is it? Other than it's temporarily changed.
In the sense that it's,
yeah,
I mean, it happens. It can't be
undone,
you know.
But that's the same problem with the contempt in that situation. You can't undo it either, can you?
Right, and it's done, and the court can say, listen, I sentence you to jail. I order you to pay the other side's attorney fees. And I, you know...
Okay, but counsel, if you order him to jail, you got to give him keys to the jail for a civil contempt to get out, so your purge plan would have to be, in Judge Justice Castle's example, it would be you have to make up that weekend.
Well,
and then once you're done with that weekend, you're done. It's not a permanent modification, is it?
Well, I think that the keys to the jail cell is a coerce compliance in the future, that the person who's been found to be in contempt, you know, and is continuing to disobey, we send you to jail and we say, you know, hey, get out of jail anytime. You want to come in and...
So you're saying that if it's a young child, I'm going to give you 60 days in jail, but you got to comply for the next 13, 14 years? Is that what you're saying would be a reasonable purge plan then?
Well, I mean, I don't know that that's a reasonable purge plan, but I think that the case...
Well, you're saying that you want to stop future behavior, so where do you draw the line?
Well, I guess I draw the line in that there cannot be a modification of the underlying order, because that's what the case says. It sounds like the court...
How old were the boys that were visiting their father? What ages?
Oh, these were teenagers. So this is a question that goes to...
So the basis for them not going with the father was they said they had other things they wanted to do and they didn't want to visit him on Friday night because they had activities that they wanted to participate in on Friday and therefore didn't want to go with the father.
Yeah.
Do the children have any say in that, or do they have to be shoved into the car and dragged over to the place for the Friday night visitation with the father? Isn't there some leeway there?
Point that I make in my brief.
So
wasn't the trial judge concerned about the fact that it wasn't the mother, the custodial parent, making the decision, but rather she sort of kicked the can to the kids and said, why don't you all talk to your dad about this? I don't have any control. She did a hands-off. Wasn't that really what was at the base of that finding of contempt, or at least one of the things? That she abrogated her job as the custodial parent and put the kids right in the center of the dispute?
Well, when I read the application for order to show cause, it didn't say that he's in willful contempt for putting the kids in the middle. It said she's in contempt because she doesn't allow parenting.
I think the court made a specific finding that she was in contempt for, quote, intentionally placing the children of the parties in the middle. Then she is using passive-aggressive techniques to abrogate her obligations as the custodial parent. That's what I saw on the record.
I see that that's what the court found and made a statement in its order.
Were both the boys teenagers?
Yes.
They were?
Yes, both teenagers.
How do we review the court's findings?
Well,
abuse of discretion?
Facts, I mean, clearly erroneous. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a contempt matter. But for the sanction imposed upon a finding of contempt, the court has more abuse of discretion.
Was there a legal error?
Well...
Given the fact as found?
The legal error, I guess, would be that it was clearly erroneous. The court's finding of contempt was clearly erroneous. The evidence did not support the finding of contempt. And if the court, this court finds that the court was not clearly erroneous, then we contend that the sanctions constituted an abuse of discretion, given the facts of the case. I'm out of time, so unless the court has any additional questions before we end, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wasserberger, good morning.
Good morning.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, counsel, my name is Corey Wasserberger and I represent the appellee, Dean Martin, in this action. The court should affirm the finding of contempt as well as the modifications entered in this case by the district court. The district court did not abuse its discretion in finding that Rhonda Martin, now known as Rhonda Brown, engaged in a pattern of conduct through December of 2014 through March of 2015.
What is your strongest evidence, or what's the strongest evidence in the record that the mother here willfully kept the children from the father?
Really two things. First, the frequency of these occurrences just after the entrance of a modification order. There was a trial in November of 2014, and one of the district court's findings at that trial, or part of its modification order, was to flip responsibility for transportation. The fact that these occurrences began just after the trial date and the entrance of that order, coupled with the frequency of it and the clear communication from Mr. Martin repeatedly that he was not okay with the lack of communication from Mrs. Brown, and he was also not okay with not having his parenting time with the children. In addition to that, Exhibit 133 was received in evidence, and that is a series of text messages between Mrs. Brown and the oldest son, Taylor. Mrs. Brown testified repeatedly at the contempt trial that she did not try to foment disagreement between Mr. Martin and the child. She said she didn't recall telling him to stand up to his father. The weekend of January 23rd, 2015, there was an issue with, as happened throughout this time period, with when Mr. Martin would begin to have his parenting time. And he knew that from text messages from Taylor that there was a planned sleepover with the youngest child, Ethan, at Mrs. Brown's home on that Friday evening. He contacted Mrs. Brown, one, to ask her to help him have his parenting time on that Friday, as he was supposed to have under the order. Then also, he asked for the parent's phone number to see if maybe that child's parent would allow Ethan's friend to come to his home here in Lincoln. She didn't give out the number. She testified at trial that she was not comfortable doing it because she didn't know she had permission to do that. She denied sending text messages to Taylor, telling him about that time to not back down to his father when he was approached, and also to not give out that phone number. Exhibit 133 is the most telling thing in evidence as to what her true motivations were. She's not credible at trial. And the fact that if this was a one-time occurrence, there might have been a misunderstanding, but this happened from right after that trial through March, period of 4 months, where he lost significant parenting time. And each time it's the same pattern, where she takes a hands-off approach.
But each time it was the child's decision that he did not want to go with his father on that particular evening. Is that a factor that should have been considered by the court?
Well, if I may first, the children were 16. Well, Taylor was 15 at the beginning of December. He turned 16 in December of that year. Ethan was 14. Now, in a certain case, it may depend on what a child's feelings are about how difficult it is for a custodial parent to make parenting time happen. Facts that were in evidence here are not enough to relieve Mrs. Brown of her obligation to make this parenting time happen. She had the opportunity to present that evidence and to call the children to present the reasons why, if if there were any, that they didn't want to go. The evidence that the trial court had before were that the Taylor was, in particular, Taylor was being forced out to have these confrontations, so to speak, where he had to tell Mr. Martin he didn't want to go. Mr. Martin was trying to reach out to Mrs. Brown to make this still happen. She refused to engage with him. The weekend of January 9th, that was the weekend where...
Wouldn't a willful determination be more in the line that the mother was telling the son, don't go on this visitation, you don't have to tell your father you don't want to do all any of this, and encouraging the kids not to cooperate with the visitation time?
Well, I believe that's what you have in Exhibit 133, where she is actively telling Taylor not to back down to his father and also not to give out these phone numbers.
And isn't it a reasonable inference for a trial judge that if she did it in a text message once, she's been doing it verbally all along?
I believe so. And I believe these are the issues that district courts are faced with. And it's not practical to say that a parent can completely avoid the requirements of a custody order by simply saying a child doesn't want to go, and without presenting any evidence more than that about what the circumstances may be. There may be times where a parent, using his or her best efforts, cannot make parenting time happen. And that may be a defense to a contempt charge.
Counsel,
that was not the case here.
I want to shift gears on you. Assuming, for argument's sake, that a judge can temporarily modify the parenting plan during a purge plan, how was Rhonda Brown on notice that there would be a permanent modification of the parenting plan in this case?
She's on notice because of the existence of 42-364-15. This statute pertains to every custody case in which there's an allegation of there being a violation of parenting time. And under this statute, it is permissible for a court to enter a modification if it's necessary to enforce the rights of one parent.
Were in your pleading or by notification of the court, was she on notice that there would be a permanent modification, though?
In the motion for the order to show cause, there was a request for any other relief that may be just.
That's kind of vague, isn't it?
She's under an obligation to give very specific parenting time under the court's previous order. She knows what Mr. Martin's rights were. And presented based on the evidence at the trial, what we're talking about is not a modification of parenting time which expands Mr. Martin's rights in some respect. This isn't a trial to give him custody, where we're talking about creating new rights in a parent. We're talking about a trial, a contempt matter, where his already existing rights are being violated. And if there's an order required to give effect to those rights, she has notice, it's imputed to her by the existence of this statute, and the allegations within the motion for contempt that there were specific violations on specific
Under your cases. Argument, what would prohibit the judge from changing custody then?
This court has held in State XL Amanda versus Justin B. that was a case where there was not notice for a joint custody as a possibility to the parties. That is a different issue because that is talking about substantively expanding rights from what a party can expect to have at trial. Here, there's no expansion of Mr. Martin's rights. His right to parenting time did not change. It's every other weekend still. It's the same parenting plan that he had before. All the district court modified was the transportation provision, which was just subsequently modified a few months before.
Okay, well, how about the guardian? That was extended 20 months or 24 months. The purge plan was only 18, so that was a permanent modification, and that affected rights, wasn't it? If you have to go to a guardian to get approval, doesn't that affect your rights?
That was a measure, I assume, in part for Mr. Martin's rights, but also in part for the children who are being caught up in the wake of this because of what Mrs. Brown has done. Now, the court has the ability to order a guardian ad litem to be involved. And the court did not abrogate its authority to allow the guardian ad litem to issue parenting time or determine what the parameters of the parenting plan should be. All the district court said was that any deviations from the parenting plan had to be approved in writing by the guardian ad litem to involve the guardian ad litem in this process.
What did you read as the scope of the guardian ad litem's duties?
Well, in part to be the court's eyes to understand what's going on in the future. more practically, I believe she's there if there is the same dispute that were to arise again, where there's, oh, well, the boys told me that it was okay that they didn't go this Friday, or that we didn't have to go, Dean said they didn't have to come this weekend. She's there to keep the court's order for parenting time enforceable. She's there to...
Does she initiate changes, or does she stay on the sidelines in an effort to coax some cooperation?
I don't believe she initiates the changes. These would be changes that either party would be seeking from the day-to-day sort of basis. It's, if they wanted to deviate from what the parenting plan says, she's there, as I understand the judge's order, to agree in writing and provides the court in the future some assurance that this was actually contemplated by both of the parties. So that there is, if there were a dispute in the future about whether, may I finish?
You may.
As to whether Mr. Martin agreed to a, you know, to have the children on Saturday instead of Friday or something along those lines, that there was a third party involved, one to protect the children's interest in
a deviation to which they agreed and she recognized.
And she recognizes the fact
for record purposes?
I believe the judge was looking at this as there are likely to be future disputes between the parties where this course of conduct is going to keep popping up again. And this was a way to protect the children from the conflict that's been going on.
Before you sit down, how many times had this decree been modified?
I believe at least four.
So these were parties who were back in court regularly, over and over. Is that fair?
They were. And the previous litigation regarding the modification, again, happened. The trial was in November of 2014. The district court modified the parenting plan specifically to change the transportation provision to require Mrs. Brown to bring the children back and allow Mr. Martin to have the children on Fridays. He was making efforts to go up and get the children because of difficulties they were having at the time. The judge allowed that modification, and I think the clear inference from the events that followed was that that didn't sit well with Mrs. Brown. For the foregoing reasons, we ask the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. That takes us to the last case of the day, which is Stanishek versus Gennetti. I am recused from this matter. Justice Wright will preside.